You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Kia ora. My name is Abby Kinane, and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa. Based in central Ōtautahi since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to enable creative and professional development and work to support the acknowledgement and understanding of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. In this episode of Art Not Science, we are sharing a talk with former director Jamie Hanton and artist Grace Crothall on her exhibition Shelter House. Shelter House draws on an atmosphere, material textures, and sounds familiar to the artist from growing up in the charismatic Pentecostal movement in the 90s. The installation takes its name from a worship song of that era, which plays intermittently in the space. Crothall explores the interplay between born-again adult and childlike states within this community of belief, dividing the gallery space in two and editing together text and design associated with her experiences at that time. Central to the project are pre-Pixar pop cultural films and biblical narratives such as Jonah and the Whale, as well as children's church teaching resources where fantastical, uncanny and moral themes intersect with allusions to the body. References to the gut, medical, scientific, metaphorical, underpin the installation as a whole, suggesting the ongoing metabolism and filtering through of belief systems entered into in childhood. Now let's head into the gallery to hear more about Shelter House with Jamie Hanton and artist Grace Crothall. Kia ora mai tātou.
Thanks so much for coming, everyone, and thanks to Grace for this body of work, Shelter House. It would make sense for us to kind of start at the start. I was lucky enough to be asked to mark Grace's master's work at the School of Fine Arts in Ilam in 2019, the show Alcala at the Alcala Motel on
Sherbourne Street.
And so it gave me an amazing insight into Grace's practice. I spent a long time with it. And it's a difficult and complex practice that's constituted of many moving parts. So this talk, if people have things to say, if they have questions, more than welcome to kind of throw them in while we're going. But yeah, I wanted to kind of just go back to the Alcala.
Yeah, okay.
And just ask you kind of as a starting point how you came to be in the Alcala. What were the kind of formative parts of your practice that led to that?
Okay. Well, before Masters and before Alcala, I'd had a painting practice and I was obsessed with this textural occupation with aluminium foil and like the ducting, snake-like kind of foil textures. And so I got really interested in snakes because of foil, because I was thinking of foil and snakes on the same level of really indulgent surfaces, but also this kind of bratty capacity where with snakes and the way they're made, like it's a simple form, but there's this mystery behind those mechanisms and they sort of seem like they shouldn't be allowed to do those things. And so I think that brought me into a more, when I got more interested in snakes, I was thinking about satanic panic in this 1980s, 90s satanic panic, which came through in memories from the children's church space. So whilst that project didn't really have a lot of evangelical Christian material in it, that sort of brought me into this space and wanting to kind of reemerge into that atmosphere and that scene.
And I wanted just to read from the text by Zoe Crook. And the second paragraph says, "This is not a show about religion, nor is it a personal exegesis." So I wondered then, if it's neither of those things, how does it fit between them, or what would the framework be?
Well, yeah, it's based on my experiences as a child in that space, and it definitely touches on a lot of religious material, and it definitely is personal in being my memories. But I think it's about processing and metabolizing all of the kind of chaotic aesthetic dynamics that occur in that space, but particularly the environments and the roles, the psychology around the adult and childlike domains and how they switch and infiltrate each other. The central focus is this kind of obsessive processing that requires a childlike lens and memory on my part to access.
And how does that, I guess the metabolizing metaphor or the the dualistic metaphor. We're sitting in kind of one space of two at the moment. We couldn't get everybody in there. But yeah, I wonder if you could talk to the kind of the dualistic, the one and the two, or the binary, and how that fits with that.
Yeah, okay. So in the Pentecostal church, and still in my experience at least, in the 90s and 80s, many of the kind of founding congregants became Christians through the charismatic movement, which was in the 70s. So many of them had this born-again experience, like this overnight emotionally charged kind of conversion experience. And so they kind of had their adult secular life, and then they found Jesus. And so with that, there was this childlike, earnest kind of space and state that was really emphasized and celebrated. And in a yeah, in terms of the worship, in terms of thinking about Hillsong, and Hillsong is, by the way, a big global now, but like mega church that was based in Sydney, and it boomed in the 90s, and it influenced a lot of Australasian churches because we sang all the songs, even though we were a different denomination.
Sure. And I guess just for those, we're sitting amongst stills from...
Yeah, so this is like the VHS tape of one of their performances, or one of their... This was kind of a hybrid of local church and mega church, so they were bringing in these... they're bringing in the camera, essentially, globalize, to spread. And the commercial, you know, the music was really successful. Darlene Check was a really talented performer, and so it was a moment for them to commercially expand. And so it was like, it would be a church, like slightly extended worship service, which would carry on as it would the previous Sunday, but it would be recorded. And there was a lot of showbiz in this kind of atmosphere because it was happening for the first time that they were, a previously private space was being broadcasted in this way. So back to this division around children and adults, the atmosphere and the sound that came with Hillsong, the songs we sang, and the adults' worship space, which was where children would be part of that before they entered children's church while the sermon carried on.
So they go into the main church.
Yeah, so while the sermon's taking place, kids at that, after the worship, the kids go into children's church. And so at that time, it was very happy-clappy. Aesthetically, it could almost be, well, not just aesthetically, but conceptually, it could almost be confused for a Wiggles concert, and just the way it's like that really energized, happy-clappy atmosphere. So it was really like, it seemed, the adult space seemed really fun and really like what I would almost describe as kind of alkaline, like a very gentle, childlike atmosphere that's really like fun and energizing, but also like gentle and tranquil. So like a relatively, like seemingly safe kind of environment as a kid. And then the children's church is very different. I mean, even architecturally, it's sort of what I think of as a closet, because the way the church is set up is there's a large auditorium, and there's a stage, there's a lot of stage equipment, and it's fairly professional looking. But then the children's church is often kind of, you just never see them. Like they're these kind of strange office spaces or secondary rooms kind of. So that space is very hidden in my thinking. And the teachings which take place often for children in that space are more Old Testament stories. And it's not like, it's not entirely intentional, but I think that the reason children are fed those stories a lot is because Old Testament stories are more, they're more adventurous and they're more exciting, and there's animals, and that it's kind of, in a narrative sense, more palatable for children. They can kind of externally take that in. But with that comes quite violent imagery and content, really, which has an acidic nature. So I was holistically thinking of that environment as something very acidic, and then the adult space more alkaline. And so that's how I brought in these digestive languages, because when I came to see this space before I kind of drafted the show, there was an immediate division between this open space here and then that confined space in there where the moving image usually plays. And so I was thinking of Jonah and the whale, with the wide church body being the whale and then the stomach being the children's church. And then further to that, more thinking around the gut and the body the body is alkaline and the stomach is really acidic. So those were the languages around, you know, creating those divisions.
And they're kind of personal.
Very personal.
Digestive things going on there as well.
Oh, Crohn's
disease.
Yeah. So I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease around the same time that I began this project. So it was just naturally like learning more about the digestive system, and there just seemed to be these. I'd already like drafted the Jonah and the whale narrative, but I think that that acidic space and that acidic focus played out more when I was thinking about the gut.
Yeah, and in delving into those kind of things of a really personal nature, you've talked about it as an autopsy of, I guess, the aesthetics and the textures and the materiality of those spaces. And I just wonder if you could take us through like some of them in the Children's Church space.
Yeah, okay, so on the right side of the wall, there's a huge, huge red carpet wall. And in my mind, in part, it's sort of like the stomach wall. But I came to the carpet. I had this obsession around felt pen and carpet in that space because just really like this tension between felt pen and carpet and colouring on the floor and like pens scattered everywhere and just this kind of chaos that is not allowed in your home. And I used to think like this is one of the only spaces where you can colour like violently and felt pen on the carpet. And this relationship between the carpet and the felt pen, I just wanted to bring closer together. And so that happened quite literally in that space, but I think the felt pen does speak to this violence, like the way that they're scribbled and the way, you know, the great way that kids do colour in that sense. So I think that that vividness and that kind of those violent gestures marry quite well with the acidic Old Testament fear-based teachings that often occurred. The other side facing are Children's Church teaching resources, which have been contrived. Whereas the colouring in sheets actually were pages from a children's Bible colouring in book, which I bought from the Christian Superstore. So that's the carpet wall. And then the Children's Church teaching resources I contrived from memories of object lessons that I'd had in Sunday school. And
so I guess there's a real mixture of kind of found objects and manipulated objects.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the Christian Superstore earlier and the kind of overwhelming amount of stock they have left of certain things, which speaks to how times have changed.
Yeah, because there's a real like evangelical boom in that sense and the charismatic kind of Pentecostal sense in the 80s and 90s. So majority of their shop is that stock. And they have an extra like back room, which is where the colouring in books were, which is like dead stock. It's a full-on place.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
I guess I was just interested in those kind of aesthetic references that are drawn out from that stock, but also those other 80s and 90s kind of pop culture references, like the Pinocchio trading cards and things like that from the live animation movie.
Yeah, everything is very much located in the 80s, 90s world. And I hope for people who haven't been inside those walls and had that experience that they can at least recognize that design language that very much comes from that time so that it can kind of locate this wave or this phenomenon of, you know, satanic panic in a certain time. Because as far as I know, I don't think Children's Church in that setting is anything like that this now, but it was my experience. And I think that movement came and went. It sort of visited. It was like fairly mainstream in America, but it definitely infiltrated church as well. But I think it's interesting because, like, for instance, my dad can't remember burning our Pokemon cards. So I think that speaks to the temporality of that movement. But I mean, of course, I remember it pretty well.
I just want to kind of touch on like generational sensitivities or sympathies to that. And we're talking about kind of a lack of comparable media examples for the material that was happening in the children's church.
Biblical stories. Yeah. So, I mean, in my mind, like, I think of Willy Wonka, which was in my previous project as well. But I find that so interesting because it hovered through the 80s and, I mean, it was made in the early 70s, but it hovered through the 80s and 90s because it's so classic. it's such a classic, like, general audience family film, but it is just such a horror film, and it has, and the horror operates by default because you can't catch the moments and you can't catch the agenda, really. It's got such a hazy agenda around it. And I feel like that is the perfect analogy to children's church, and the why the horror operates so well is that it's not intentional horror, but that's why it's so scary. So I think trying to pull in these, I think other people, like, you know, even in my generation, you know, have these strong memories of watching Willy Wonka and how they felt about, even there's a kind of architectural horror in it as well. But I think, like, my mum came in this morning and she was like, oh, she's like, you know, they were just stories. And it was easy for her to say that, I think, because in her generation...
And she's referring to the Bible
story. Sorry, yeah, I should be more specific. She was referring to these Old Testament Bible stories. And there was a removal she had, and I think that speaks to the fact that this piece of literature was sitting next to Hansel and Gretel, and it was sitting next to, you know, that Brothers Grimm tint.
Like a more naturalized horror that was kind of already, or at least a raw.
Like, yeah. Even fables being more of a thing, whereas, like I said to you before, like, in this context, these stories next to Sesame Street even, they just don't exchange. There's no exchange, but there was more of an exchange, and I think because of that cultural climate, they were more able to distance and remove. Mm-hmm. And even though she has faith, she still said just stories, so that speaks to that.
Yeah.
And I think that religious language was just much more marinated then from the appearance, whereas I knew as a kid that it was a fairly secular world and that it was a very separate universe that we were part of. So there weren't pop cultural things that really connected, except for Pinocchio, that 1996 version. And it's such a, you know, old classic story, but that was so scary. There's a scene where those boys in the Terra Magica, this, like, fear, they go through a ride and they manifest into donkeys to, like, mirror their jackass behaviour. And they're cackling, and this really, it's just very demonic and full on. And I think that movie came and went. Like, not a lot of people have seen it, but those who have really remember it.
And that was, like, peak Jonathan Taylor Thomas, was that?
Yeah, that's, like, the pop cultural part, not the demonic donkey part. So I wanted to bring that in, even though it's fairly obscure because not everyone remembers it. Like I said, I still wanted to bring these things in, you know, create some location and context around where that comes in. And, you know, knowing that it's, will be foreign to a lot of people, but people have such different, everybody has such different connotation to that world.
And that format of those posters is the object lesson. Is that right? Is that?
So an object lesson is kind of a powerful illustration of physical objects, or like an exercise, like the one in there, for instance, is making a chocolate cake, which the idea is it's around deception, that these two chocolate cakes look identical, but they've got very different ingredients, very different tastes, which is meant to be an analogy for, you know, one wrong ingredient, one bad decision you make in your life is still sin, so that's going to taint the whole thing. So that's an example of what an object lesson is, but yeah, there's a lot. There were many pretty interesting ones. But what's interesting about those is that I think for adults who are teaching these lessons, they are, you know, there's a desperation around what they're trying to come up with in order to teach children these messages, and I think they almost get distracted by the materiality of the thing or the object lesson, which is interesting to me, just in that if they, you know, have this faith and this connection, they kind of, there's an avoidance of what they're actually speaking to and the kind of processing and planning of the lesson, like the colouring in sheet instructions, which I'm assuming made by adults. You'll notice that a lot of the instructions haven't been followed by the kids because they're kids. But I think that sort of speaks to that as well, that these very desperately orchestrated frameworks kind of like, or finding some kind of sense of relevance or fun on top of these Old Testament teachings, like the chocolate cake. You know, there's such absurdity to it, but yeah, but it's woven together in this patient way.
And I think that's what this show does really successfully, is it's a deep dive on materiality and spaces and the way that those contribute to belief systems and how we learn and how we're indoctrinated and things like that. And I was thinking, you know, around the whole history of Western art history and its relationship with the church and patronage and, you know, grandiose architecture and things like that. And that was a question that I kind of brought up very early on in our conversation, was the movement from Alcala Motel, which was a very specific, you know, off-site space where you had the architecture weighing in on what you were saying. It was working in with it. And then how does that work in the gallery? Like, what happens when those elements come into a gallery space which is stripped back, it's kind of neutral, but then those spaces themselves, the Pentecostal churches.
Yeah, there was a mirroring with the way, like the recycled cavern, the way that galleries function and the way churches function, because Pentecostal churches, they're fairly anti, like, heritage churches in terms of sacred architecture, because I suppose they believe that their spirituality is so authentic it doesn't need architecture to reinforce it. So they will go for the most functional shell. And then I suppose, in a way, galleries do that too. The church that I grew up in was a factory, and so that shell is fairly institutional. And so that influenced the door, like that door was really important to me, because these institutional surfaces that you'd recognise in other architectures kind of speak to just how obscure and different the belief centred inside that framework is. Like, it has this ability to suspend the belief when it's got this sterile corporate kind of surface casing it. Yeah.
And what's, I'm kind of curious to know what your feeling is for people coming into the show who are believers or non-believers. What's your feeling towards that? Like,
well, I mean, that's what's made this project so difficult, because people have such a vivid association with this world, regardless of how much or little they know around it. I'm grateful for Zoe stating earlier on in the text that it's not explicitly caught up in, like, it's not a critique on religion, and it's not, like, a personal exegesis either. But I think I really want people to see this, the kind of reality of this aesthetic structure that and dynamic that takes place, and especially the psychological switching between children and adults, where children are digesting material that seems like, if anyone's going to have to stomach it, it should be adults, but it's sort of left to them. And like, I was thinking that the stomach has to be so acidic that it can break down food, and it almost seems a little bit like children's church has to be so acidic that children can break down God because of that fear-based, you know, those fear-based juices that allow that. Yeah,
fear-based juices is amazing. That's a
yeah. So and I think there's a real chaos to that. Like, the more New Testament stories are more social, and I think perhaps might be less impacting. So in terms of people's response, it's hard. Because I know this world so well, I don't know. I really don't know how people who have not encountered the space will take it. But I feel like, I hope that it's sufficiently, even in a like pop cultural sense, so removed that it is very much a kind of extinct movement in my mind. I mean, certainly not Christianity, but this particular space, which is very specific. I hope that it will intrigue people around the mechanisms that take place and these dualities of, like, you know, acid, alkaline, father, son, parent, child. I hope that people can, you know, be able to string these things together in a world that's otherwise quite foreign to them. Yeah. And as far as how I would feel around Christians seeing the work, I feel like there's, like, I've had some friends come through from high school who I think are still practicing Christians, and they're kind of young enough to be able to be a bit objective, and yeah, I think they enjoyed it. But I think a certain, I don't want to be ageist, but certain generation of Pentecostal Christians, I would be a bit more nervous. There was a woman that came in on the weekend that thought I was evangelizing in earnest, and that was a bit stressful, but then in a way it actually makes sense, because
that just shows the total ambiguity that you've kind of created here.
Yeah, well, attention to detail coming from that place. Yeah, and good, because it's such, a lot of it is so distant in my memories, but then so vivid, so I'm glad that in a way. But it was funny because she left her number for me to ring her, and just the thought of anyone thinking that this was, like, me evangelizing was so stressful that, I, like, as uncomfortable as that phone call was, I still had to ring her because I just didn't want her to think that I was evangelizing. So, yeah, it was good.
Cool.
Yeah.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Well, I might open to the floor for any questions that people might have at this point. Any questions?
Can I ask about the collaborations? I know you worked with a few people in the process.
Yeah, I worked with Mitchell Bright and Priscilla Howe and Ben Don. I worked with them in my previous project. Mitchell does film photography, and so these images and the colonoscopy image on the far back wall in the next room. We played these Hillsong VHS tapes, and then he would photograph the screen and film. And because of that, those channels of removal, it kind of almost has a painterly quality. And I know Zoe refers to it as a prosthetic for memory. The AV imagery was really important for this kind of early 90s Pentecostal, the big experience kind of feel. And Priscilla, she did the design for all of the object lesson posters inside. It was really fun working on that together. Yeah. And Ben did the sound, like if you hear the little organ interludes with the Jonah story and the monitor inside, he was doing the music and the sound, so we worked on all of that together. Yeah.
Do you think that your separation from the church has influenced the work in this exhibition?
Yeah, even though my main feelings around this work were sort of like, you know, age 5, they're still sort of the same, even though I was about 19, I think, when I left church, and I'm 27 now. So I think it was just difficult for me to make work about a world that was difficult for me and complex for me. So I wanted to be sufficiently emotionally removed to try and be objective. But in a way, I'm not emotionally removed because, you know, you can't. You just can't. So, but in the same time, I think I needed to be ready to step back. In saying that, yeah, that the general feelings and kind of breakdowns of the worlds were really how I felt about it as a kid. So
would it be useful to explain the term Satanic Panic?
Yes, that movement. So this movement was sort of the 80s, 90s. It was very much a conspiracy movement in America, and it was sort of the thinking that mass industry was the devil's domain. So anything that was really successful, the first instances of it, like the classic instances, were like Led Zeppelin records and backmasking. If you play Stairway to Heaven backwards, it will say My Sweet Satan or something like that. And this phenomenon around rejecting like the world, as in Satan's world, to renew your relationship with God. So people who'd had these conversion experiences and become born again Christian would, you know, like get rid of all of their Bob Dylan and Led Zeppelin and all of these things. So that was kind of, it was very caught up in rock and roll in the 1970s, but in the 80s it was more, it could be like shampoo brands, it could be
Pokemon cards.
Yeah, well, it was Pokemon cards, and for me, like I said, Dad burnt our Pokemon cards. Very flighty and very quite random as to what these things could be, but it was just this fear that of infiltration. But like I say, the fact that, you know, even in my parents' church, the fact that they can't remember it speaks to how kind of how much of a fad it was. So it started to enter children's things more into the 80s and the 90s. And so even like the Britney Spears Barbie was kind of a comment on that, like this thinking that like these people are false idols and they are, you know, they're like, you can't see who's guiding their strings. So there's like dark forces behind their success, or dark forces behind, you know, industry success. Yeah, and that movement infiltrated different churches, but it was also sort of, I mean, American mainstream.
Just following on from that, you talk about infiltration quite a bit, both in the sense that that kind of satanic panic movement was afraid of the infiltration, yet it seems in your description that that was the movement that was infiltrating, so to speak, these Jewish movements. Is that something that you were kind of exploring here, or...?
I mean, it's one of the kind of absurdities that make that space acidic, which is why it was brought into the project specifically. I mean, yeah, that's a good point, that you're sort of spreading the word on the other side.
Mm.
It's interesting. I mean, I think it might have taken certain personalities to be really caught up in all of that. But yeah, I think the main reason using it was just that it was this kind of fear-based teaching that sat with the rest of the space.
Okay. Is there anything else that you want to add, Grace?
Well, there's like a detail going back a bit that I didn't touch on. In that space in the far back wall, there's a sort of like a colonoscopy diagram, and there's footage of Hillsong sequences that we use the same process with the VHS and the monitor, and it's all black and white. And then there's also images obscuring these frames from the video of like Play-Doh intestines. And that whole thinking came from thinking of the camera being inside the church for the first time. It was like a colonoscopy in the sense of a camera entering a sacred space, or a camera entering a space which it never normally enters. And so like in those early Hillsong footage, you'll see like another like invasive cameraman, like, you know, running around and swooping and like kind of catching scopings, which is like collecting key information, which has happened when I got my colonoscopy. Like they take scopings so that they can track inflammation and gather these key features. And so you have all these physical manifestations, which is such a strong thing for Pentecostalism, of like raising hands. And so like you'll see all these images on that back wall of these key features in these moments. But that was just another digestive summary that I think was quite important that I didn't get to mention before.
One of the things I loved about the show was the detail of the baby monitor in the children's church space. Can you tell me a little bit more about what's playing on that? And yeah, a bit more about the baby monitor?
Yeah, so that is the actually the audio to these images, like these big, so this is a Hillsong late 90s broadcasting set. And so you're hearing the music like very faintly through that monitor, but it's kind of clashing with the bigger CRT monitor that's right next to it, of this very authoritative narration of Jonah and the whale. And so that was, again, this kind of like very distant, like silky, alkaline, comforting sound, which the adults are preoccupied with. And then that was like infiltration coming through from the other room. Like in my church experience, there used to be a monitor, not a baby monitor as such, but a monitor that was like a little video monitor that showed the service. So a few parents were kind of like minding children, but also catching the service, which speaks to a level of neglect, obviously. But I think the baby monitor was also there playing to that adult-child dynamic and switching those roles. I've had these funny memories of coming out of children's church too early, and all of the adults are engaged in a quite intense worship space, and it's kind of more intimate and personal than where you left it last, because the entry worship is really like happy, clappy and vibrant, but this would always be a lot more like serious and intense and intimate. And so you kind of like, you come in too soon and you'd be like, what are they still, and they can't see you because they're caught up, like they're distracted and preoccupied. So there's a funny moment where like you as a child are kind of like, you know, are they finished yet, or
am I supposed to be here?
Yeah. So I suppose that kind of had some relevance with the baby monitor.
Wonderful. Okay, well, thank you so much, Grace.
Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for coming along.
That was Grace Crothall in conversation with Jamie Hanton on her exhibition, Shelter House. The exhibition runs until Sunday, 4th of April, and the gallery is open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Tuesdays and Fridays, and 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. Thank you for listening, and tune in again next month on Friday, 19th March at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art, Not Science. Mā te wā!
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Scientech, Resine Paints, and the Crater Rim.